is here at the station in Santa Cruz, and we now take you to the Saturday special with your host, MZ.
Hello?
A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Good morning, Monterey Bay. One thing we can promise you today is that it will not be a snoozy Saturday special. Well, they don't happen very often, but I admit that they have once or twice over the 13 and a half years. Welcome to hour number one. We're going to be talking about the electronic voting machines and one woman's crusade to stop them. It's going to be a good show. Stay with us.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
So you'd think the 2000 presidential election was hairy, huh? Well, if the 100,000-plus electronic voting machines are installed and used in the upcoming November election this year, watch out. That's right, no paper trail whatsoever for all those millions of votes. It may well make us all yearn for the good old days of the hanging chads. Well, a woman named Bev Harris has written a book, Black Box Voting, Ballot Tampering in the 21st Century, and says that, quote, we have a train wreck that's definitely going to happen, unquote. Bev's on a crusade all over the USA to stop it, and yes, will be our guest on the next KSCO special this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on We're Sorry to Have to Scare the Bleep Out of You, but it's for your own good radio, AM 1080 KSCO. Well, good morning. This is MZ. And that Crossfire music is probably somewhere in the computer, but no, that's the last, that's the closing music. Never mind, forget it, that's no big deal. Let's see if we can bring on our guest. That would be Bev Harris, who should be on line six. Bev, welcome to the KSCO Saturday special.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great.
Where in the world are you?
We are driving somewhere in the middle of the country. Well, we're in the central time zone right now.
You're not sure quite where you are. You're just somewhere in the central zone.
We know. We just aren't really telling everyone who's coming and where it's coming and so forth.
Oh, interesting. So you're sort of, it's a stealth operation almost, huh?
Well, I wouldn't call it that, but, you know, sometimes what we're doing is we're interviewing an awful lot of witnesses.
I think what you're doing is absolutely great.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful. And when I read about it in the AP story in the local Santa Cruz paper a couple weeks ago, I said, this is a lady we've got to get on the air with us. So I'm sure you've been...
There was something they didn't quite get right in that, and I'd like to straighten it out. It's not just Bev Harris running around the country. We actually have a publicly funded consumer protection organization.
Uh-oh, just what I was afraid of, cell phones. Something tells me this is going to be a train wreck, this program.
Now.
Well, listen, I mean, we got to do what we have to do. Bev said, look, I said, can you got a landline? She said, no, I'm traveling. It's a cell phone or nothing. I said, okay, we'll keep our fingers crossed. Is she still there?
No, we're waiting for her to call back. That was my fault. I have to claim that one.
Oh, really?
I knocked her off trying to get our other guest.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, forget about the other guest, because we got Bev. oh, jeez. So we're talking about a train wreck for the election, and it's a train wreck Saturday special already. So, okay, we'll keep that line open, and hopefully Beverly will call back when she realizes that she's talking to nothing here. Our apologies. Here, I was telling everybody that it was the cell service, and it was actually it was on our end here. But anyhow, would you tell us? You started to tell us that there's some inaccuracies or something, or
yeah,
it's not.
It's basically what it is it's not a woman running around the country. It's an organization. It's a consumer organization. organization, Black Box Voting, is publicly funded consumer protection for elections. We've got two full-time investigators, and we've got
Bev, I can tell you this is not going to work. It's not going to work because you keep cutting in and out with the cell phone. And I guess you have to keep moving, huh? Is there any way to stay?
Yeah, we'll pull off where we have a good, strong signal. And I'll be back with you in about 1 minute.
Okay, that'll be great.
Thanks.
So we'll tell everybody that this is AM 1080 KSCO. We're sort of working with technology to the extent that we can here. Bev Harris is our special guest, she is our special guest of the program, and we have phones ringing all over the place, so I'm going to disconnect everything and just ignore that. So, is that a little better? I guess it's not. So, all right, why don't we just put on a tape and run something else? So.
Okay, she says it's better now.
Okay.
I'll be on for a while. We'll just take an action.
Yeah, this is going to be 2 hours, so, cell phones are not good for two-hour programs, even when you sit in one place. They tend to go out, and batteries tend to go dead and everything. So we'll keep you for as long as we can. Are you there, Bev?
We're just about to pull off where I have a very strong signal, and I'll stay put.
Okay. Why don't you put on some commercials for a few minutes here, Aaron, okay? And we'll use up the time that way.
HQ, this is 54. I've got a 302 on 41st.
Hold tight, 54. 36 has a 923 in progress. Okay, 36, regarding your 923, you've got large crowds gathering around hundreds of cars?
Affirmative.
Okay.
Hi, this is Don Fredrickson from GotNet. GotNet specializes in business services. Whether you need a T1 or T3 or just a place to host your website, GotNet has a solution to fit your needs. GotNet offers server colocation and custom website development. We have e-commerce servers, streaming audio and video servers, and Cold Fusion and database servers available to handle your hosting needs. GotNet understands that businesses rely on the Internet, and we work hard to assure fast, reliable service. Call GotNet today at 460-2000. Food, shelter, clothing, net. GotNet.
Take a walk through Messiah's Mansion. A full-scale replica of one of the world's most ancient temples is open to the public July 18th through the 21st. Free tours are available from 9:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. and are approximately 75 minutes. Messiah's Mansion is located at the Seventh-day Adventist Conference Center in Soquel at 1931 Old San Jose Road. For more information, call 831-475-4233.
And we now take you back to the Saturday special with your host, MZ.
And we may or may not have a guest, do we?
Hi.
Hey, is that Bev Harris?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Can you
and
hear
hopefully
me now?
We'll be able to do this for more than a few seconds here at a time.
Yeah, I'm going to get right in a stationary position, and it should be absolutely fine.
Well, you sound great. So give us a little background about who you are. It was Dateline San Jose, so for some reason I thought you were a San Jose resident, but no, you're from state of Washington, right?
I'm from the state of Washington. We have a national organization. We have actually got 8 people who are involved with it on a formal basis, the boards of directors, an executive director, associate director, 2 full-time investigators. One of our people's from Sacramento. So it's not too far afield, and then we have one from Texas, which, as we know, needs a lot of looking at, and then several from Washington. But we're a national organization, and what we do is consumer protection for elections. The organization is called Black Box Voting, and it is publicly funded.
Oh, how publicly funded?
We are funded by a large number of donors, just regular citizens, and what we're funded to do is to look into specific concerns and go and investigate them, concerns with election procedures. So, for example, you know, even a national election is all run at the local level. And so if someone says, we have a problem, and as we just received a report in Arkansas where they had impossible numbers. Every county had numbers that couldn't possibly be true. The Secretary of State's site said that Prairie County, Arkansas, had 115% turnout. in their recent election. And no, the citizens were unable to get an answer for what that meant. So we went and we investigated and found out what the deal was behind that. And we're getting reports like this from all over the country, a lot of reports of voting machine miscounts and things like this. And I think we're the only organization ever to actually independently go and investigate and find out what's really going on.
Okay, so what started that? I mean, something must have happened to say, hey, to make you think, hey, I've got to do something about this. Someone's got
right.
to.
Well, you know, I did write the book, the Black Box Voting book that you had mentioned there, and of course did a lot of research and realized during the writing of that book that the electronic voting machines were a significant problem. Not just the touch screens, but also the scan machines, because the central count computer has some very specific vulnerabilities. But after writing that book, I began to travel around and interview poll workers and election judges and find out what was really going on in the elections, and came to realize that there was no place these people could report problems. For example, in Alameda County, an election judge saw she had 6 touchscreen machines in her polling place, and people voted on them all day, but 2 of the machines at the end of the day said there were 0 votes. She called it in and was told, it's not your job to report this. A similar thing in San Diego, where the machines didn't agree with their own self. The screen said there was a certain number of voters, and when there was a printout at the end, it said there was a different number of voters. And when they called it in, the people said, well, the elections officials said, well, just take the smaller number. We don't know what to do. Now, situations like this really do cry out for an independent organization to come in and find out what's really going on.
Boy, I'll say. and what you've uncovered is a lot of improprieties. So, I mean, God, I mean, where do you start? Where do you start to fix it?
Well, I equate this to something. It's very simple and very human. I equate this to something like, you know, if you have a whole chain of businesses across the country and you give everybody an operations manual, that doesn't mean it's going to be followed. In fact, we know if we've been in business that people don't follow the operations manual. If you don't have anyone go around and visit and find out what they're really doing and talk to the employees, pretty soon everyone's sort of doing different things. No matter what it says in the manual, they're not necessarily doing the right thing. And I think in the U.S. there's not really a quality control component to elections. And it's turned into kind of a mess. Some places are much better than others, but there needs to be some way to hold our officials accountable. The other thing is we've now privatized such key portions of the election so that they're run by private companies with no real oversight that it really cries out for consumer protection. I mean, if your toaster blows up, you have some place to report that. You need to be able to have a place to report it if your election blows up.
So what do you propose? I mean, a new branch of government, sort of?
No. I think it needs to be very much like the consumer reports are, where it's not, it's entirely independent and funded by public donations. The reason being that then as we do a good job, we get more donations. If we don't do a good job, nobody donates, you know. So
I see.
It needs to be entirely independent of all, because it's just too, everybody's just too involved with each other. And sometimes, you know, it depends state by state. In some states, you'll actually have one of the parties running the elections. For example, they'll elect the election supervisor in a county, and she represents either the Democratic or the Republican Party, and then she runs the elections. And so if you're on the opposite party and you launch a complaint, of course she doesn't pay attention to you. So there needs to be a truly independent consumer protection organization, and that's what Black Box Voting is right now. Our website, blackboxvoting.org, is going through a redesign. You will start seeing within the next week a number of stories. We've probably uncovered about 14 stories in the past 2 weeks. It's amazing how much has gone on. And our goal, again, is to just try and improve the process. In fact, I can break a story here of the type of thing, and you'll see how constructive this is.
Oh, boy, right here on News Talk AM 1080 KSCO.
Sure.
You're giving us a scoop. Thank you.
Yeah, well, one of the things we found is just amazing. You know, the ballots that are being printed, Now, of course, ballots are used with optical scan machines, the ones where you fill in the dot or you draw a line and then run it through a scanner machine. Everybody thinks, oh, this is good. Everybody looks at my ballot. But they don't. They only look at the computer. But the ballots that are being printed for those and also for all the absentee contests nationwide for Diebold Election Systems. And, of course, Diebold's in about 30
Diebold is the name of a company that specializes in manufacturing voting machines, is that correct?
Right. And they've got their machines in 31 states, and they print all their ballots for the optical scan and for absentee in one location. And that's going to be 12 million ballots for the upcoming election, which is about 12% of the entire United States voters. Okay? Now, the problem they're having, which they have not revealed or handled at this point, is they're having a labor problem at this particular facility. There's about 12 employees who've decided to join the Teamsters Union and are looking at going on strike. They don't seem to have a backup plan because the two facilities that they're looking at for backup, one of them has legal problems, and we're not quite sure what. We'll find out what those legal problems are. The other doesn't have the capacity. So we've got a situation where the paper ballot situation could melt down, where they have 12 million paper ballots being printed in one location with no real backup plan, and the staff is going to go on strike. The reason that I think it's constructive to bring this out in the media is as the press starts to ask Diebold about this, this forces them to say, oh, yes, we do have a backup plan, and it is, and then they need to go get a backup plan.
I guess I'm really confused about why Diebold is having doing paper ballots in the first place. I thought their whole big thing is that it's paperless, and that your big thing is that paperless voting is dangerous and fraught with problems.
No, that's a misconception. The press has tended to focus on these paperless machines. It's and there's a lot of different things, but what we focus on is the computerized voting machines. Now, when you vote with a piece of paper, whether you vote by absentee or on an optical scan system, you run it through a machine, and the machine reads it, and a computer program on the machine tells it what the count is supposed to be.
Okay, and it's been that way for many years, right?
Right.
Because it's been probably 40 years since votes were counted, you know, by humans, right?
Well, these optical scans, it's been about 10 years.
Uh-huh.
What's changed is this. Nobody's looking at the paper ballot to compare with the machine in any meaningful way. So whatever program is, in fact, in some states it's illegal to ever count the paper ballot. You can only do the machine count. Well, the machine count is based on a computer program, which sometimes works but sometimes doesn't.
Uh-huh.
So it isn't, you know, unless you audit, this, it's not really a computer problem. It's an auditing problem. If you don't ever use the paper ballot, and it's against the law to look at it, you might as well not even have it. And so, yes, that's a better system than the touchscreen because it is auditable, but it is not audited right now. And what we need to do is audit both systems. They must have a paper ballot that is verified by the voter, and there must be a meaningful way, and I don't mean by just hand-picking 10%, I mean 1%. You know, what they do in California is they take 1% and they supposedly check it against the machine, but it isn't really working out the way that they thought, and it's not a large enough amount. For example, in Los Angeles County, what they wanted to do was pick 1% of the precincts, and they picked a precinct that had 2 votes. You know, that's not really meaningful in a county that has 1 million voters. And in Seattle, they pick 125th of 1%, and it's not even randomly chosen, and they just handpick some votes and call it good. So if someone was going to tamper with that election, it would be a problem. What is needed is both a voter-verified paper ballot and auditing that against the machine. Otherwise, why have it?
Right. Okay, so how do you do that? A massive job.
No, it's you could do it as a very meaningful spot check. We have to have the will to do it. But for example, and this is very effective as far as looking at fraud. You don't really want a random check, although computer scientists will say, "Oh yes, it's valid." No, what we're doing here is a fraud audit, not a random error audit. What you want to do is have each party pick a small number of precincts at their discretion. And it could be a very small number, so it was only a total of 3% spot check. But it's picked by opposing parties who are, you know, so therefore, if I'm in one party, I can say, you know, the two precincts I'm going to pick for a spot check are going to be this one over here, which is the primarily African-American district, and this one over here, which just looks funny to me. You know? And the opposing party picks another two or three precincts. And they say, well, I think, you know, you guys mess around with this one, or it just looks weird to me. Those kinds of discretionary picks, it's like jury selection. The discretionary part of it's very important when you're trying to stop fraud. But you can still have only just a small percentage that are picked by discretionary, and you just take, say, five, you know,
the real juicy quote that's been attributed to you is there is a train wreck that's definitely going to happen. By what? Mm-hmm. What did you mean by that?
The machines miscount. They miscount fairly regularly. And the difference with this election and all previous elections is that there will be monitors in place to catch the miscounts and hotlines in place to report them quickly. We've identified over 200 elections where the machines have miscounted. This uh-huh. time we have 2,000 volunteers out there reporting the miscounts on the spot.
Uh-huh. Okay, so I'm my head's swimming here. So what does all this mean? I mean, what are we going to do? What do you hope to happen so that a train wreck doesn't happen?
We need to put auditing in place.
Okay, so that's what this is all about. Just which is
it's an auditing problem. You need four auditing things at a minimum. They're fairly simple. In most cases, they're not time consuming either or expensive. And if you do those, a lot of the problem goes away. What you do not want to do, by the way, and this is something I predict you're going to see very shortly, you don't want an electronic verification. You want real auditing with real people involved. They're going to try to put something forward, which is some sort of cryptography and electronic verification, and say, see, you don't need auditing, we'll just do this. But that's got a policy problem. Democracy is based on having large numbers of the people themselves involved. You can't have a handful of cryptographers have control of the vote.
What's a cryptographer?
Now, a cryptographer, they have, cryptography is where they encode things. It's kind of, you know, how government intelligence, for example, will encode its messages so that no one else can read them and you'd need to decode it. And they've got a lot of ideas how you get a couple of cryptographers and they encode everything and then you get this receipt and you go and check it again at the internet with a secret number. And now, we want to keep it a democracy where people are involved in We the People, and you get to look at your vote on a piece of paper. The piece of paper is called a ballot, not a trail. What we're learning is anytime legislation calls it a receipt or a trail, then they start moving in with cryptography solutions and they get rid of the ballot. So we don't want that. What we want is a ballot, and there's four very simple things to do to audit. One, you want to be able to compare the number of voters who showed up with the number of votes that show up. Simple thing to do. We do that already. It's called a poll book. You come in, you sign in, and then you vote. You compare how many people signed in to vote with how many votes signed up. We already do that, but companies are trying to take away the poll book and make it an electronic and invisible process. We don't
danger,
want that.
Danger, danger, danger. Danger, yes. Danger, danger, huh?
The next thing is we do want the voter-verified paper ballot. And that needs to be compared against the machine with the spot check, and the spot check needs to be done correctly. Again, we're talking, if you have 500,000 voters in a county, which is a large urban county, you'd want to spot check perhaps 5% of those, and the choosing of what to spot check should be done with discretionary chooses, not random chooses, with opposing parties. That'll get a very honest spot check that'll really catch it. Third, you want to be able to compare what happens at the polling place with what happens at the central count. Now, understand, you go and you vote, and you vote in a polling place, your neighborhood school or whatever. Then the votes from that place are taken into the central count at the county, and they're all added up. And that's done on a different computer system. There's a couple of attack points in there where someone could replace the electronic ballot box, which is just the size of a memory card, or somebody could mess around with that central tabulator at the county. There's a very simple way to prevent this, and that is what the polling place can simply push print on the machine. All the machines are able to do this, so that at the end of the day, when the polls close, it prints the results at each polling place. They make that publicly available, post it on the door, make it available to the press, And then the results from that matching polling place that are reported at the central tabulator get compared. So whatever shows up at the county should match what came from the polling place. And you
want
to have two different reports.
Sure. And that should work fine. And is that the way it's been done, or is that what you're proposing as a simple...
But it has not been done in California. In the last two elections, we sent monitors out to see if those polling place reports were ever published, and they were not. They should be. And that's one of the things we'll be checking for. And the fourth one has to do with absentee ballots. A lot of people vote absentee. In California, it's between 25 and 30%. In my state, it's almost two-thirds. And in Oregon, it's 100%. Everyone thinks that your ballot goes from you to the...
What did you say? In Oregon, what's 100%?
Absentee voting. It's all mail-in.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Oh, wow, because before talking with you today, I was thinking, boy, what an easy solution would be for to just change the whole system where everybody votes absentee. Then the paper ballot part is solved.
Except that they still run absentee ballots through a computer. They don't look at the paper. They just run them to the computer, and whatever the computer says is good. But here's another thing with absentees. You think that you mail it in, it goes to the post office, and from there it goes to the elections division. Well, that's not how it works, we found out. It goes from the post office to a private company that sorts it, and from there to the elections division. Now, there's a very simple audit procedure missing here, which is how many things got received by the post office should match how many got received by the elections division. Nobody checks. So you see, if that middleman, that private company, just decided we're going to sort these out and we're going to disappear some ballots from the African-American district, there'd be absolutely no way to ever prove that they never arrived. So all we need there is a receipt, a certified receipt from the post office that says we got this many ballots received, and it needs to be matched up with how many got received by the election.
I have a question. Why does the post office need to be involved at all? I always thought... And this is why it took a while sometimes to count votes from certain precincts, the ones that are farther away from the county building or wherever the vote counting takes place. I thought that they were physically brought in. I didn't think that they were mailed.
Well, no, an absentee ballot is a mail. In fact, in
the absentee. Oh, yeah, of course,
yeah.
Absentee.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're just talking absentee right now.
Right. Yeah. We're
okay, but the other ones. Okay, so if we were doing what? Okay, I got you.
Yeah. So
my brain just isn't engaged
is
today.
It's a large part of each election now. And you need to have this easy audit, which is a compare the postal receipt for how many showed up with how many show up at elections divisions. I find it amazing that there's resistance to something so simple and so important.
Who's resisting?
The county election registrars in most cases.
Why?
They're saying it's just not necessary. And then they come up with things like, well, we have people watch each step. Well, you know, it's very different from watching things versus comparing numbers. Comparing numbers is an audit. Something should match something. That's like saying, well, I have someone stand and watch my bookkeeper. I mean, that's nice, but let's compare the bank statements.
Oh, my gosh. Boy. Well, I don't know. I think no matter what, what happened in 2000 was just such a bizarre, what do you call it? Just a mess. There's no other word. There's no better word.
It was a symptom of what has gone wrong in terms of the election system. We've gotten rid of a lot of the checks and balances.
So instead of fixing it, they're probably going to end up making it worse, it sounds like.
Right. They didn't get the right people involved when they started coming up with solutions. They treated it as a computer problem, and it's not a computer problem. And you're going to see more of that. You're going to see them treating it as a technology problem. They're going to say, well, we've got technology now that's better, or it's open source, or it's this, or it's that. But you see, it's an auditing problem. Counting votes is just bookkeeping. This is not complicated. You have to be able to show your work. Now, I don't see any big... outcry from businessmen, from small businessmen saying, I want to get rid of all my receipts and my bank statements and my canceled checks so that I can have cryptography. You know, the guy who owns the business needs to be able to go in and look and see for himself that it's correct. Well, as Americans, we own our country, and as Americans, all of us as people need to be able to go in and look and see for ourselves. We can't turn it over to a handful of computer programmers who say, trust us, we got it right.
Speaking of computer programmers, I'm not sure that's a computer programmer, but a compatriot of yours, Jim March, I believe, is on line 12. Let's see if we can conference Jim into the conversation here, Aaron, if possible.
That would be great. He's on our board of directors.
Hello?
Yeah. Jim, are you there?
Yep, sure am.
Hey, good. Hey, I'll be darned. We're all together, you and me and Bev. This is great. And our KSCO, vast KSCO audience for AM 1080, everybody's favorite radio station in the Monterey Bay Area. By the way, I should give out the phone numbers in case anybody wants to call with a question. It's not every day we have these fine people with who have dedicated their lives in recent months to fixing, to averting a train wreck, shall we say?
Yes, exactly.
look at it more as a giant theft attempt, but that's...
let me give out the phone numbers. It's area 831-479-1080 or 477-1340. If you want to participate in this KSCO Saturday special, our guests are Jim March, who is a, I guess, a professional computer tech, right?
And, up through 2001, yes. Tech support, land administration, professional geek, yeah.
Okay, and something got you interested in hooking up with Bev on her crusade, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, I saw some very early reports on her initial work in taking apart the Diebold software, kicking its tires in basically an impromptu laboratory, and finding security flaws up the wazoo. Bev started publishing her work in, late June, early July, with some of her first reports on just how bad the Diebold software was. And her analysis was the first time anybody had gotten one of these election programs out of the county elections division and into the public. Bev had discovered the files back in January. Well, she published some early results on what was in those files, and they were just shocking. So,
well, wait a minute. Bev, you discovered these files. Are they files that should have been more secure so that you couldn't discover them?
Yes. They left them on the web, and it was completely unprotected. I found them on Google.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
These were files that you know, contained the actual code that counted ballots, or what?
Oh, yes. The actual code, and not just that, and Jim March helped me research this. We found actual vote files from San Luis Obispo County in California. They were live votes, and the interesting thing was, they were put on the Internet 5 hours before the polls closed. You heard me.
Yeah. Somebody, what we found was that somebody at the county election headquarters, a Diebold employee, apparently, took the actual vote tally as of 3:31 in the afternoon on the day of the March primaries in 2002, wasn't it, Bev? Was it the 2002 primaries, right? Okay.
What happened to Bev? Is Bev still there?
Well, she'll be back.
Okay.
She's on our line.
Oh, okay. Well, the March primaries, 2002, 3:31 in the afternoon, a Diebold employee working on site at the county grabbed the vote totals and posted them on Diebold's own internal tech support file transfer site. It wasn't a website. It was an FTP site. It's a small difference. Anyways, this was a gross violation of election law. So I was able to determine what that file was. It was an actual live election results file, mainly by showing it to the County Registrar of Voters, Julie Rodewald, down in San Luis Obispo County, and says, is this your stuff? Oh, yeah, it turns out it was. So that launched a big investigation. It was a big cluster. But the point here is that Bev discovered the actual, there was copies of runnable program files, which you can download on my website. You can find Jim March. Google Jim March and the word vote prar, VOTEPRAR for Public Records Act requests. You'll find the Diebold test notes page where you can download your own actual Diebold vote tally program and build a Diebold vote counting machine in your own bedroom or wherever you keep your computer. Okay, anybody on the internet can do that. So, you can look at my notes on how to test the security. It stinks. It's terrible. Well, I found Bev's early results fascinating. So the first thing I tried to do was run Public Records Act requests against Alameda County, which was using the Diebold touchscreen system way back then, there have been more counties now, but they were one of the pioneers, and try to get a look into the county to see if Bev's results could be duplicated out in the field. Well, Alameda County absolutely stonewalled me. The California Public Records Act, at least right now, doesn't have much teeth behind it, so I was stonewalled. So I turned to, hey, Bev.
They just told you it was none of your business, or what?
Oh, it was a blow-off, yeah. It was a basic blow-off. Oh, this is not public record. This is not public. Well, all right, give me a break, guys. You know, okay, fine. Well, I asked Bev, okay, well, give me a copy of these files. Let me take a look at your work. Let me take a look at the actual files and see what we're dealing with here. So I basically duplicated her work, okay, with her permission. This is, you know, typical laboratory stuff. One scientist comes up with some discoveries, somebody else duplicates their work. Typical. And, oh, boy, was she right. basically, the central vote tabulation software that runs one computer per county at the county election headquarters and counts the incoming vote was rigged to be tamper-friendly. Okay? It's not just that it wasn't tamper-resistant. It's that it was positively tamper-friendly. This sucker was set up to be, well, you can edit the audit trail. You can edit the actual votes. You can edit anything you want in there with no password required. All you got to do is load a copy of the Microsoft Access database, and you can hack to your heart's content.
Wow.
It was bad. All right. Not only that, but there appears to be features in it designed to defeat the normal spot checking an honest county election official would do. Okay. Basically, the database holds all the vote data twice. It's a duplicate set of books in there.
Uh-huh.
And if you, as an unwitting election official, ask for total number of votes cast for your entire county, it'll give you one number out of one database. If you ask for numbers from a particular precinct, it'll give you another set of numbers from another database. Now, by default, the two databases match, but they don't have to. If you were to edit the numbers for the total vote count for the entire county, then if an honest election official smelled a rat, the first thing they'd do is spot check some precincts. And they would come up with accurate numbers for any precinct they spot checked, not knowing that they're pulling data from a different set of tables than where the total county results come from. So it was designed to defeat internal audit checks.
Wow. Well, that sort of dovetails into a email I've received from Paul in Capitola. It says, MZ, I've heard that most of the voting machine companies have former government employees owning running them. Is this true?
Absolutely. Diebold, Sequoia, and ES&S have all hired former California Secretary of State election officials and staff for the Voting Systems Procedures panels to then go and turn around and lobby them. One of the most shocking cases we found, there was one guy named Lou Dieter one of the things we got later, I'm jumping ahead in the story for 1 second, but there's 15,000 internal emails that were slipped out of Diebold by an insider during the summer of 2003 when the story really started to heat up. So we've got a lot of their internal emails, many of which are as shocking as the Enron tapes. Okay, these people joke about internally how poor the security is and how they personally could rig elections. They actually say this in these emails. But one of the emails was from a Diebold lobbyist who was talking to a Secretary of State staffer about how poor the security was for the ES&S product. Now, this lobbyist, Deborah Seiler, is a former California election official herself, okay, Secretary of State staff. The guy she was talking to, Lou Dieter, reported to her in the kind of offhanded comments that there were security problems with ES&S, but according to a Public Records Act request, he never complained about ES&S security to the Secretary of State's office in any fashion. He complained off the cuff in a cocktail conversation with a Diebold employee, which made it into the internal memos. Well, 9 months after not making a report on these ES&S security problems, he became a lobbyist for, guess what, ES&S. So, yeah, we've been able to track all kinds of stuff going on.
What do we do?
What do we do?
What do you do? What do you do?
As Bev says, audit trails are the answer. Okay? I'm kind of a fan of open source as well.
Tell us what that means.
Open source, well.
You're a geek. Most of us are
right.
not.
When the computer counts your votes, it's doing so based on software that somebody wrote. Open source means that I, being a techie, have the ability to look at that actual code and see how it operates. In other words, they publish the source code for how the program operates so that the entire American techie community can look over their shoulders and say, yeah, there's no security backdoors here, and nobody's put in a little booby trap there. And it, you know, basically it's a way of having America's geek community look over the shoulders of the people programming these voting machines and make sure there's honesty involved. That's what open source means. Okay, it's a way of harnessing the techie community.
Okay, so that's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Oh, very much so. Right now, Diebold writes the software to count your vote. Right now, there are only three companies in America, private companies, that are independent test labs authorized by the Federal Elections Commission to oversee these companies' work. In other words, Diebold writes software, they send it off to one of the three test labs to have it checked out and certified. Those certification labs are the only ones in America allowed to see the source code. Now, we have proof that on at least two occasions, and probably three, Diebold defrauded their federal testing labs.
What do you mean defrauded? What do you mean?
I mean that they lied to them. They withheld key pieces of custom code that they had written and passed it off.
Now watch what you're saying now.
I know. I know exactly what I'm saying here. Okay?
You're making some real serious charges
against... No joke. Okay. The whole problem with Diebold defrauding the testing labs is the big camel in the tent that people like the California Secretary of State's office haven't quite come to grips with, that Diebold did this. And it's a horrible thing, and it's a shocking thing. And the big problem is, if Diebold successfully defrauded the testing labs, and I believe we've got hard evidence they did, okay, if Diebold did that, that means any of the other vendors, such as Sequoia, such as ES&S, might have done the same thing. The testing labs are the one line of defense we have currently. And if that's getting messed with, red alert, folks. You know, danger Will Robinson, I don't know how else to put it. Let me tell you...
danger, warning.
Bad, yeah. Let me explain how they...
Like the robot in Lost in Space, that's funny.
Yeah, well, okay, there's... let me tell you how they defrauded. The first piece of fraud we know of, as I just explained, there's a major security hole in the Central Vote Tally System, GEMS, okay? The hole is that if you have Microsoft Access around, then you can edit and tamper with the internal contents to your heart's content. I mean, there's no limit. One of the federal testing labs, Cyber, discovered this. Okay? Diebold, in internal mails from one Diebold tech to another, were discussing how to answer Cyber's concerns. Someone named Jennifer. I don't know her last name. They were talking about how to answer her concerns. They said, well, tell them that... somebody would still have to get past the Windows NT security in order to go tamper with the vote results, so it's not a problem. Well, what they didn't tell her is that their standard practice is to use the exact same password on every single NT server that they install across the entire freaking country. Okay? So they've disabled the Windows security that they told her was a line of defense that would prevent that from being a problem. So that's one example of them defrauding a federal testing lab. In their own comments to each other, they said, that probably won't fly, but, you know, we'll try that line. If not, we'll have to do a total rewrite and it'll be a big mess. In response to that comment from a guy named Ken Clark, a senior engineer, head of their tech support group, basically, the guy he was talking to, Nell Finberg, got back to him and said, oh, yeah, Jennifer bought that, so we're all good. Okay? We have this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay. Let me interrupt you here just a second. I need to talk to our pilot in command, Aaron Bond. Mm-hmm. So, Aaron, I understand that we do have some commercials that need to be played before the end of the hour. That's right?
That's right.
Okay, and we do have Bev Harris back on the line. Is she in the conversation, or do you need to bring her in? How does?
I was just kind of waiting for your cue.
Oh, okay. Okay, I think they can. I think we can all be on together, and I think we can take one caller in addition to that. I think that the system will allow that. So let's at least try that and see if that works. But since we do have some other commercials to play this hour, it's 9 minutes before 11 a.m. Hour number one of the KSCO AM 1080 Saturday Special. I think we should probably do those. Take that commercial break right now, and be back in a couple of minutes or whenever with a lot more. On electronic voting here on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. Back in a flash.
54, I've got a 302 on 41st.
Hold tight, 54. 36 has a 923 in progress. Okay, 36, regarding your 923, you've got large crowds gathering around hundreds of cars?
Affirmative.
Okay, hold on, 36. Come back, 54, about your 302. You have hordes of hikers and bikers on 41st Avenue?
10-4, and it could turn into a 1206.
A 1206? That means we're all 404.
Enough, you idiots. This is the chief. It's the weekend of July 17th and 18th, right? Bay Federal's annual summer auto sale happens every year. All the South County dealers gather at the Register Pajaronian in Watsonville, and the North County dealers gather at the Capitola Mall. People come out of the woodwork because it's such an easy way to buy a car. Everything's on sale, and loan officers are on site with Bay Federal's low-rate loans. My wife already got a sweet deal at the last sale. So get used to the crowds. They're here because Bay Federal has a better way to buy a car. Darn rookies.
What's wrong with the media? Want more media diversity, more local programming, and less commercialism? Well, tell the FCC. The Federal Communications Commission is the government body charged with regulating radio and television. KSCO is proud to be part of the first ever public hearing on local media. This will be July 21st in Monterey. The only opportunity to talk with the Federal Communications Commission one-on-one here on the West Coast. The hearing will take place July 21st at 5:30 p.m. at the Monterey Conference Center, number 1 Portola Plaza in Monterey. The hearing is free and open to the public, and you're encouraged to testify about your concerns and experiences with the local commercial media. The second thing you can do is attend a community teach-in on the media. These preparatory events will help you better understand the situation with our media and what we can do to improve it. Visit the website www.media-alliance.org and keep listening to KSCO Radio. We'll keep you up to date. Losing money in your 401k or other investments? Do you believe the mainstream media is telling you everything you need to know to protect your financial future? For these answers and more, listen to The American Advisor with Joe Battaglia at 2 p.m. here on AM 1080 KSCO. Tune in to this live call-in program and learn how you can receive a free silver coin. That's The American Advisor with Joe Battaglia at 2 p.m. right here on AM 1080 KSCO. Red Hot News Talk for the Central Coast.
And now back to the Saturday Special with your host, MZ.
Hey, thank you, Aaron. Yes, sir. Down with mega media, up with local responsive media. We're talking today on the KSCO Saturday Special with a couple of really neat people, Bev Harris and Jim March. Both are involved in a group called blackboxvoting.org. There is a website by the same name. You can check it out at any time. And they're quite concerned about the impending train wreck here coming up on November 2nd, I believe, probably, when we vote for the President of the United States. You think 2000 was bad? You ain't seen nothing yet if we keep heading down the same road with no auditing things set up for. Set in place as they should be. So let's see. Are we all together on the phone lines now still?
Hello.
Hey, there's Bev. Okay, good.
Yeah, switched phones. I'm sorry about that. My phone must have just, I don't know. It became bizarre, so I got a different phone on a different network.
Oh, great. Okay, so you sound terrific. We got 5 minutes remaining in this hour and then the whole next hour. I guess you were able to listen to what Jim was saying. Is that right?
Yes, and I can add to that, one of these certification labs, one of the three, has been the one that's primarily in charge of certifying all of the central tabulators. And now remember, the central tabulators are the thing at the county that adds up all the votes, and they work for both touch screens and for optical scan machines and for absentee votes. Okay, they add everything up. So they're a critical piece of computer software.
Yep.
Our full-time investigators, me and Andy Stevenson, went in and just showed up at the lab. Now, understand, this lab has refused to answer any questions. He has not said what his credentials are. He has refused to even answer panels from the California Secretary of State. He refused to answer an interview from the New York Times. And so we just showed up the day before 4th of July, and his secretary wasn't there to run buffer, walked in, and we got the first, I think, ever videotaped interview with Sean Southworth of Cyber Labs, and we got about an hour. And he said some things that were very disturbing. He said things like, well, the vendors don't like me to put anything negative in the report. Now, you think about that. He's supposed to be an independent testing lab, but the vendors don't like him to put anything in the report. They pay him.
Right.
You know, the vendors are paying the lab.
Yeah. He's the only person in America.
The next thing that he said that was very interesting is I asked him, I said, well, in the independent SAIC report, which was commissioned by the state of Maryland, they found 328 security flaws, 26 deemed critical. You know, I said, you know, did you just have a bad day? I mean, how'd that get by you? And he said, I never saw any of the stuff that they looked at. And that's a pretty horrible answer. What is he saying? You know, this is the official software used in the state of Maryland, and he's claiming he never saw it.
Listen, we've invited callers. We've had one caller waiting for a long time. That would be Noel in Campbell. Let's see if we can bring Noel in on line one, bring him into the conversation.
Hi, this is Noel.
Hey, Noel. Thanks for calling the KSCO Saturday Special, and thanks for waiting.
Well, thanks for having me on.
I
have a couple of points and a question. One, I'm visually impaired, and I got involved in this over the years, looking at the machines that have been offered to be accessible by the disabled community, and testing them at different conferences, and then in March actually tried to vote with them. And like many other people that are visually impaired in our community, couldn't vote with it. It wasn't working. And so some of us put together a summary of the stories that we had, sent it to the local registrar of voters, and it subsequently ended up in the hands of the press and Mercury News and others. And it helped to raise some awareness of the fact that, unlike what a lot of the visually impaired and other disabled members of the community have thought, was these machines are not as accessible as everybody assumed they would be because the manufacturer said they were. And so that started getting me really more concerned about what was represented in these machines, because they are really difficult for certain members of the disabled community to use, or in some cases impossible. And yet a large bit of the justification for having this approximately $4 billion expense across the country is the Help America Vote Act, which was designed to make these machines more accessible by the disabled. And so we have a lot of blind organizations and others in the disabled field fighting to get these machines, and they're assuming, incorrectly I think, that they will get accessibility, which may not be a given, and two, that the machines are secure already, and if you try to increase the security, you would get rid of or significantly decrease their accessibility.
No, we only have about 10 seconds. We have to break for the news. We'll hold you over into hour number two, so stay with us. This is the KSCO Saturday Special on AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey. There's a whole hour ahead. We hope you'll stay with us. We'll be back in about 6 minutes.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
Well, on my computer screen, it says, hey, boss, I got off to a rocky start today. Hour two will be perfect. You don't understand, Aaron. That's what makes KSCO the greatest station, because we have the best technical difficulties.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
It is now 7 past 11 a.m. We are beginning hour number two of the KSCO Saturday Special with guests Bev Harris and Jim March. They are what I would consider experts on electronic voting, and that is going to be a very strong issue of concern increasingly for the USA because of the upcoming November 2nd election. And as we were saying, you think 2000 was bad? Woo! What could be shaping up? I just shudder to think about it. But in any case, that's the subject today. Before we went into the break, we also had a caller, Noel in Campbell, I guess, who is visually impaired, and he was about to give us some suggestions. I believe about what could be quite helpful. So if we can all get back on track here with all of us on the phone, it would be great.
If I could make a comment on both Bev and Noel's issues here.
Sure.
What's happened is Bev has looked at both the security and the federal oversight process and has found that to be poor. Noel looked at the usability for visually impaired and other disabled community issues and found that to be bad. Basically, every time anybody's ever looked at these programs, they found them to be bad.
Well,
I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah,
this stuff's bad.
Jim, this was one of my issues here, was when I, as a person who's considered to know something about access technology and human interfaces,
right,
was examining these machines from that perspective, I found that the designs were so shoddy and poor.
Yeah.
That, as I stated, they seem to be more like junior high school science fair projects.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And it made me worry about the rest of the design, and I started worrying about the security in the machines. And I went into this as I started doing research myself over the last couple of months to find out more than just the accessibility issues and why many people were starting to raise a controversy saying, well, if you improve the security, it'll wipe out accessibility. I started finding out and being shocked by how poor the security was.
Exactly.
But my primary point I wanted to put is, as we've ended up nationally here with a lot of people in the disabled community figuring they have to push real hard for access and assumed that we could trust the security because we were told by the companies and obviously since registrars of voters were trusting these companies in the certification process, we were all assuming that these machines were secure. And as like the consortiums of different groups such as computer scientists have gotten together and started finding out these machines really aren't secure, the question of how to make them secure, one being the verified paper trail, have started to make a lot of visually impaired people worried that the grounds we've covered in trying to get accessibility on these machines will be lost. And so
hey, Noel, I've been meaning to ask you ever since you've been on, what did you guys do before any of this was brought up? I mean, how did you vote, you know, how did you vote last election and the election before?
So blind
because you said you were having trouble seeing.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, a lot of blind people vote, and I've voted, you know, throughout my voting life.
I take
a trusted person that can vote for me, and I'm not able to vote under those systems independently and privately, and that's a difference. Some people go to voting places and have to have a poll worker or poll workers help them with the process, and there are a variety of different ways. A lot of visually impaired people vote absentee so that they can go over with a trusted person, go over their votes. So it's not like blind people have not been able to vote, or disabled people in general. It's that we haven't had independent, private means to vote.
By the way, Noel, I'm interested in Do you know about the tactile balance being used in Rhode Island and Europe? Now, I was very interested in that. It's not Braille. It's tactile.
Correct.
They have a cassette tape recorder that comes with it. It's sort of like a low-tech touchscreen, as far as I can tell.
Right. It does, of course, by the very nature of it, it does rule out people that are deafblind, for example. They can't listen to the tape. The tactile balance you're talking about are essentially an overlay or template that has tactile ridges around the holes, so you can actually, with your fingers, find the holes through the template and use a pen or pencil to mark through those holes the ballot that's underneath it. So it's
A touch screen would also rule out the deafblind, though, wouldn't it? Because
The way the touch screens have been designed is, again, very limited in that they only permit access, in the case of visual impairments, to people who can use speech or use large print, not even people that have to use both. A lot of elderly folks have to have both, and many of the designs don't allow even that. But they also don't allow an output that somebody could hook up to a Braille display if they were having to use only Braille because they maybe couldn't hear. And one of our arguments has been in these the limitations of the access technologies is that they don't, for one, most of the designs like the Sequoia have not bothered to make them work with both large print and speech, and also to have other outputs such as Braille possible.
Right. In Rhode Island, I went to the Secretary of State's website there, and I noticed they give the voter the option, and they say, would you like a Braille ballot or a tactile template? Mm-hmm. So, and both of those are, by the way, low-tech and don't even require certification, I don't believe, because they're low-tech.
Well, certainly low-tech solutions here seem to be some of the better ones. One of the limitations of the tactile ballot systems are that you might overvote or undervote, and that you might not mark the candidates correctly, and you don't have a way to verify that.
Well, what really saddens me is that I thought, long before we even did this program, that I had a wonderful solution, and that's that everybody had to start voting absentee. You know, and it not be on paper with a paper ballot. And earlier in this program, I guess it was shown to me that there are problems there too, Haive.
Although those problems are easily solved, you know.
Oh, so you think that might be a good idea? I mean, maybe that's the best idea of all is mine still, right?
There are some problems with absentee ballot tampering, but there are some fairly simple and very inexpensive methods to reduce the problems. Significantly, you know. For example, if you just
that must have been suggested before. Have you heard that before? Have you heard that idea advanced before, Bev?
She mentioned the state of Oregon does that.
I have to tell you, no matter what system is used, people figure something out. For example, in Oregon, people were going around near election time, standing on street corners with boxes saying, "Put your absentee ballots here." And people thought they were official, and so they would give them their ballots, and nobody ever knows what happens to those ballots. So, they always think of something, don't they? The absentee balloting is only a solution if we solve the problem with the central tabulators, because they still aren't counted, you know, of course, by hand. They're counted by a computer, and they're still tabulated by a pretty insecure system.
This is one of the things. I mean, I don't think that just because people are nervous about using computers for these things that we should be labeled as Luddites. I personally have talking computers and Braille computers all over my house and love to use electronic gadgets, but I am really very worried about this train wreck, in particular the major issue of the ability of some mischievous or malicious code in the systems being able to really rig the whole election across the country. And that's a major security issue that really outweighs many of these other issues that we have. And it really isn't something that can only be fixed by throwing away access technologies or making it impossible for disabled people to vote. And my issue I would like to see is fewer of the disabled community folks out there being used by the
the voting machine manufacturers to say, let's rush these voting machines into place, as was the case in the recent Ohio suits by an organization trying to force them to buy the DRE machines.
Oh, and there's something very important about what happened in Ohio. In Ohio, 31 counties had contracted to buy touchscreen voting machines, and then a bill came through the Senate that allowed them to rescind their contract. As soon as that happened, the National Federation of the Blind filed a lawsuit on civil rights ground in all 31 counties. What they did not disclose, though, was that they had accepted a $1 million payment from Diebold and actually had a formal partnership with Diebold on ATM machines. So that was something that, you know, whether or not they say that was quid pro quo, $1 million is a lot of money, and you must disclose that. Now, when we found that and we got it into the New York Times, 24 hours later, the National Federation of the Blind withdrew all their lawsuits. I don't think they wanted people looking at that too closely.
Mm-hmm. Well, and my points I've been trying to make in the blindness and disabled communities is that we shouldn't be just narrowly focused on demanding access and demanding use of these electronic voting machines and assuming the security is okay, because most visually impaired people in this field, in fact, almost none of them, most visually impaired people, and maybe all, don't know anything about the security to the extent that they could declare that these machines are secure enough, that we don't need to improve the security. So we're trying to help.
You don't have to be blind to not know those things.
Well,
there's a different kind of blindness.
Yeah, right.
Would you rather trust someone who you trust, or would you rather trust a programmer you never heard of?
We never heard of. No, I'm only kidding.
I have a quick question for you, especially with Mr. Marsh on the line.
Sure.
Is that one of the things that's, I think, a little bit secondary in terms of priorities is the issue of eavesdropping technologies for monitoring people's voting and thereby using that information to coerce people into voting certain ways.
Well, one of the things, we know that Diebold has experimented in that area, okay? We think that they've actually done systems on a very limited scale to break the secrecy of the vote, okay? We have several examples of small pieces of technology. I don't think they've done it for every single voter in an election, but they have done it for some subsets of the voting population.
Yeah, the United States has had a technology called Tempest, which is a very black, technology in general for monitoring electronics equipment like computers and the kinds of technology that were used to drive vans around neighborhoods and point antennas at your house to see what station you were watching or listening to.
Well, fortunately,
and this is something that made me concerned enough at the last conference I was at a week or so ago, where I went up to a Diebold machine with an AM radio in my pocket and an earbud in my ear to listen to the AM radio. When I got up near the Diebold machine, I wanted to see if it was well shielded so none of the information from it was leaking out. And the thing was putting up a storm or tempest all over the AM band. So these machines haven't had those kinds of basic, simple security steps.
I can give you much worse than that. Diebold's original voting machines, the early touchscreen and the optical scan, were set up to phone the results in from the precinct to the central tabulator immediately ahead of actually hand-carrying the memory card ballot boxes, okay? But they do an immediate update on election night so that the county could get faster results into the media. Well, that was supposed to be done over landlines. Well, they did a little hack where you could use ordinary cellular modems, and they were cell phoning the results around on election night. Well, I mean, that leaves the entire democracy of America wide open to the NSA or anybody else who can just do cell phone intercept.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's madness. But you're absolutely right.
What's NSA?
National Security Association. National security.
National Super Spook.
Agency. Yeah, the spooks. What I forget what the A is for. Agency. National Security Agency.
Yeah. Oh. On this is an issue. The eavesdropping is, as I say, is maybe considered right now a secondary importance because of the importance
right.
of making sure we don't have elections that can
well,
be
Well, here's the good news.
Okay,
let me tell you the good news, all right? Van Allen freaking, what we're talking about is technically known as Van Allen freaking, and yeah, it works, all right. Basically, you can read a computer's brain from across the street with the right gear. The good news is you can't do that kind of thing on a very wide scale. Okay,
right.
If there was a black van across the street of every single polling place in America, somebody would notice in short order. So
but there's a way around that now, which would be to read what's on the. There actually is a way around that, which I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. If you just used a cell phone to get that data, and then someone was able to hook into your cell phone.
Oh,
they
yeah,
can do
yeah,
that
yeah.
from a much greater distance. So that would be a... And
yeah.
one of the things that I want to mention, by the way, is some math. People don't realize this. What I'm concerned about and have always been concerned about is not so much outside hacking as inside access.
Oh.
And people think, well, that's
no
only
joke.
Two or three people. Well, let's do the math on that. There's over 2,400 counties in the United States, and each county has inside access into their system. And in each county, 3 to 5 people have access. So there's over 10,000 people in the United States in any given national election that have inside access. I asked Sean Southworth from Cyber Labs about that. And I said, well, how do you feel about inside access? And we did the math, and he said, oh, well, I'd have to tell you, I think it's crazy. I don't think you should ever have more than 5 people with inside access. Okay. 5 people is what the national certifier guy says it should be the max. We've got 10,000. There again, we have a problem.
Well, we also have a phone number to give out, 479-1080. We also have another phone number to give out, 477-1340. Those are both numbers for callers to participate in this program, the Saturday special on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. I don't know if Larian Aptos is still with us. He's been holding for a long time. I think we're going to have to say goodbye to Noel and Campbell. Thanks very much for your call and your contribution to the program, Noel.
Yes, thank
but
you.
I think we can only get one extra caller on at once here. So if Larry is still there, then let's bring Larry into the conversation. He's online too, I think, Aaron. So let's see what happens here. Larry, welcome to the Saturday special. Are you there?
Hey, Michael. Thank
How you,
Michael.
Doing?
Doing great.
Hey, good. Well, thank you for waiting. You know, technology really is amazing, even with its glitches here. The glitch at the beginning of the program was mostly due to a flaky cell signal, and now that we've got Bev on a landline here, that isn't a problem. But you're in Aptos.
And on a cell, so technology continues. Thanks for your perseverance.
Oh, okay. Right.
And I just want to say there's thousands of issues, you know, in our country. I mean, everything from, you know, poverty to all kind of rights and so on. But of all the different issues, I mean, this has got to be of thousands, maybe like number two. Because if we can't vote accurately or somebody can really hijack an election, I don't mean a close one like, you know, the stuff in Florida, but I mean really... really hijack an election like this is possible with this, the democracy is totally useless and worthless.
Yeah.
And so this is very, very important. So what I'm asking is, are you guys hooking up with some of the major networks to try to get the word out to people that, you know, the normal people that just hit little news blips here and there?
Well, we've been pretty successful in terms of media outreach, all right. Part of the way that you get media access is by doing things and discovering things and filing lawsuits and, you know, just being active gets the media's attention. And Dev and I would say, have been pretty successful.
Yeah, I would say. And you're going to see more of that. We haven't even really launched a full-scale media blitz yet. We will be doing that in about a week here, where we wanted to get one last really intensive investigative tour, and I think we've got enough information now that we can be breaking story after story after story for quite a while. And with the media,
we need TV and radio most. Broadcast media is what gets America understanding what's going on. Print media is good. It can explain a lot of different complex topics, but a lot of people just don't read news.
Right. Well, great. Thanks for your perseverance. Keep it up. It's very important.
I must say, yeah, thank you, Larry, for your call to the Saturday special. Doesn't look like we have other callers, which is very surprising. I would have expected there to be a lot more callers here to the program, but maybe they've just been fascinated with the discussion here. It's all about electronic voting, and if you want to chip into the conversation, give us a call at 479-1080 or 477-1340. I haven't given the fax number today. We do still have a fax. It's 475-2967. And all of the previous mentioned phone numbers are in area 831. If you're outside the 831 area code, you'll obviously have to dial that. If you want to email a question or comment to the program today, just type in the email address to use is mine, mz@ksco.com. I'm looking at the computer here, communicating with everybody through various channels, and it's just amazing. So, So, what do you think is going to happen, Beverly? Do you think you're going to succeed in getting these very simple auditing suggestions implemented between now and November 2nd?
Well, it's a daunting task, but I think we have a chance, and I'll tell you why. Black Box Voting is putting together a team of thousands of citizen volunteers to help do citizen audits. And what we're looking at doing this with is with the August and September primaries, calling the discrepancies into hotlines and getting them publicized immediately. That may help us get a last-ditch effort into getting the checks and balances in place by November, because I really do think that with enough reports coming in and enough media, people are going to see this potential for the entire election to melt down if we don't get checks and balances in place. And by the way, to become a citizen election watcher, and we aren't really revealing exactly what we've got you doing yet, because we'd like to keep it a little bit under our, a little bit quiet right now. But do go to blackboxvoting.org and simply email. It'll give you instructions there to volunteer for the election watch group. We may not contact you for another week or two, but that we'll be lining everything up right about the first part of August. And you don't necessarily need to monitor something in your area. Some of this can be done on the Internet or by following email. And so you could even choose, if you think your own area is perfect, to monitor something in Florida, for example.
Yep. I'd like to point out something that people can do. On Monday morning in Sacramento, there's going to be a key hearing on whether Diebold is going to continue to operate in Alameda County. Alameda is one of those pioneer counties in the Diebold product, and because they're running an older touchscreen system, Diebold touchscreen, they were not excluded blanket from using Diebold in the November elections, as four other counties were with a later machine. Alameda, running this older system, is going to be allowed to run it as long as certain security updates are handled properly. Well, we have evidence that those security updates are not being handled properly, and there's a public hearing on it coming up Monday morning at 10 o'clock.
So was this hearing planned some time ago so that you can go and blow the whistle?
It's come as a surprise. It was, first of all, in order to limit public participation, they're not broadcasting what they're doing with very much notice. They're probably in violation of the Bagley-Keene Act, which is basically the open meetings laws. They're being very secretive and not very nice, and we need the public to show them that we're paying attention to what they're doing, basically. If you can make it, it's 1500 11th Street. Make sure of that address. 1500 11th Street, on the first floor, there's an auditorium in Sacramento. It's at the corner of 11th, and it's one block from 11th and P. 11th and O Street. It's actually at the Archives Plaza light rail station. If you get off at if you take light rail, take the Archives Plaza station. If you can make that meeting at 10 o'clock on Monday, it's very important because they're trying.
You might
want
to have hors d'oeuvres. That would attract people.
Yeah, well, we can't control that, but we're hoping for roast Diebold.
That's pretty good. Hey, it's the KSCO Saturday Special. That little bit of humor came from Jim March, who's on the board of directors of Black Box Voting. We also have its executive director. Is that the right title for you, Bev Harris?
Yes, that's right.
Okay,
I'm the executive director. I'm an employee of the board.
And just for the benefit of our audience, you weren't always doing this. You were doing something else. You were in public relations, I think, right, or something.
Well, I've been a writer since 1992, and for about 7 years I did public relations writing. You know, with writing you can do all different genres. What this really originally came from, though, is in the early 90s I had a number of corporate writing assignments on embezzlement and financial fraud, and they were kind of fun. They were very in depth, where I got to meet the embezzlers and really look into the, you know, look at the records and how they did it. And I got away from that. I ended up working with Jack Anderson, who's a very famous investigative reporter from Washington D.C.
Yeah,
and
he
I
used to work with. He took over from Drew Pearson. That shows my age. Now is Jack
right,
Anderson?
Right.
Is
yeah,
Jack Anderson
and,
still with us? Or did he pass on?
He's retired, but I was doing his literary marketing and publicity, and I really enjoyed it. So I thought, well, you know, I'm going to spend my writing career doing this stuff. I got to meet all kinds of authors, wonderful political books. I really enjoyed, but I kind of by accident stumbled into information about how the voting systems were removing their auditability. And having written about embezzlement so much, I knew, you know, because it's not, there's a surprising percentage of the population who, if there are no checks and balances, will exploit that hole. I would say about 1 in 20 people are kind of vulnerable to temptation, and it's surprising who they are.
You think 1 in 20 one in 20 people is basically a crook?
No, they just kind of, you know, can't resist, you know, helping themselves. Or if somebody offers them temptation, they talk themselves into why it's okay to do it. And and they're often, because I met the embezzlers that I did, they were often very nice people, like a grandmother who would bake cookies and everybody loved her, and then she just couldn't help herself, you know. She'd be in the back doing things she shouldn't. So, and they also are very good at imparting a feeling of trust, even when they're very crooked. For example, there was a guy we found who had embezzled $500,000 from a law firm, and then he went to prison for 4 years, and he did it with computer fraud. He then talked his way into a position as a senior programmer for what's now Diebold. Believe it or not, he had access to the King County election machines 24 hours a day. And people there loved him. They thought he was a very great guy. Well, he's now been sent back to a work release program for failing to pay $600,000 restitution on an embezzlement. But you see, the point being, I always hear people say, oh, our system here, it's okay. I trust our county registrar. Well, most county registrars are trustworthy, but you can't tell from how they feel or how they act. You really can't.
We have a wonderful one here in Richard Bedell. He's great. But I think, unfortunately, he's retiring.
Well, yeah, and there are, we are, because we visit so many, because we've been going around doing investigations, I can tell you there's some wonderful people in the election systems who are really hardworking and exactly what we want. And there are also some people who aren't what we want. And the key questions are not how nice they are, it's when they start resisting auditing. When they start saying, oh, we don't want anyone really double-checking, or I guess in California, there was a particular county registrar, Scott Konopasek in San Bernardino, that said he didn't want anyone monitoring, and if he found him, he would kick him out. You know, that's a clue there that there may be a problem, because we should have people who welcome this. In fact, one of the sources that we use, who was an election supervisor for a very large county, used to bake cookies for people so they could come in and watch. That's what we want.
Now that's an idea.
Yeah.
We should look into doing that, as I was talking about hors d'oeuvres. The best way to get people to come is to bribe them with food.
Sure. You know, when you start getting the feeling they don't really want people involved, then that's a danger sign.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think long term we're going to win this issue. Whether we do so before November is an open question, but there's also the fact that I think we can put enough pressure on these various agencies and people and everything else that they won't be able to try at least large scale hacking, at least not to the degree they want. So we can ratchet the pressure.
Well, that's something.
But long term, right. I think we're going to fully win. Okay, we're ahead of them, and we're going to beat them.
I'm going to put out the cuts 37 minutes past 11, so that means we have, 23 minutes left in the Saturday special for today on electronic voting. We do have lines open at 479-1080 or 477-1340. We have an email box wide open, mz@ksco.com. We got a fax machine. I don't know whether it's been checked, but it's 475-2967. Various ways for you to participate if you care to. But right now, let's go to a commercial break and come back after having thanked the advertisers that enable us to bring you these kinds of programs. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a few moments.
HQ, this is 54. I've got a 302 on 41st.
Hold tight, 54. 36 has a 923 in progress. Okay, 36, regarding your 923, you've got large crowds gathering around hundreds of cars?
Affirmative.
Okay, hold on, 36. Come back, 54. About your 302, you have hordes of hikers and bikers on 41st Avenue?
10-4, and it could turn into a 1206.
A 1206? That means we're all 404.
Enough, you idiots. This is the chief. It's the weekend of July 17th and 18th, right? Bay Federal's annual summer auto sale happens every year. All the South County dealers gather at the Register Pajaronian in Watsonville, and the North County dealers gather at the Capitola Mall. People come out of the woodwork because it's such an easy way to buy a car. Everything's on sale, and loan officers are on site with Bay Federal's low-rate loans. My wife already got a sweet deal at the last sale. So get used to the crowds. They're here because Bay Federal has a better way to buy a car. Darn rookies.
How's this for a summer bargain? Travel 1,000 miles for less than $250, and that includes room and board for the entire family. Where can you find this bargain? RVs of Meriden, Scotts Valley. With over 4 acres of Winnebagos, Alphaseas, Dolphins, Bigfoots, and Weekend Warriors, RVs of Meriden has the perfect RV for you. And get this, RVs of Meriden has the new Winnebago Vista, the small class C motorhome built on a commercial VW truck chassis from Germany. With its powerful V6 engine, the Vista gets great gas mileage and sleeps 4 fully contained. Here's the best part. You can own a brand new Vista RV for less than car payments and get a second home tax deduction. RVs of Merit still has the fantastic 2.99 interest rates. So hurry in and lock a rate today, and you'll look like a hero in a year from now. RVing is the least expensive way to see the good old USA, and RVs of Merit in Scotts Valley is always the best way to RV, serving the Central Coast for over 30 years. RVs of Merit. 2.99% fixed for 10 years on selected 1999 or newer models. Customer participation required on approval of credit.
Hello, I'm Robert Stangero. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangero family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Our Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both Gilda and my son Dino look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
And now back to the Saturday special with your host, MZ.
You know, I was just sitting here listening to that last commercial for Gilda's and realizing that that commercial is over 13 years old. I mean, that commercial hasn't been freshened in 13 years. But guess what? It doesn't need to be, because Gilda's is the same and it's always great. It's absolutely amazing. And I don't know if we have... That probably should be in the Guinness Book of World Records as the longest running commercial that's exactly the same. We've invited Big Boy to come and record a new commercial. He says, why? It says what I want to say. That's great. Anyhow, welcome back to hour number two of the KSCO Saturday special. My name is MZ. We've got special guests with us. Jim March, who's on the board of directors of Black Box Voting, and the executive director of the same organization, and that would be Bev Harris. Bev is somewhere in the breadbasket of the USA, I guess, somewhere in the Midwest. Jim is in Sacramento. I'm in Point Richmond. Aaron is in Santa Cruz at the AM 1080 KSCO studios. And where are you? Yes, you. I'm talking. There's you, the person who's been thinking about calling the program here and adding to it, 479-1080 or 477-1340. I understand that the serial faxer has sent a fax which Aaron cannot even describe. Is it that dirty? Oh, no, it's not dirty. It's funny. Is that right, Aaron?
It's not dirty at all. It's just, it's really funny. And if I even tried to describe it to you, I'd completely ruin it.
Oh, okay.
I'm just going to tape it to your door.
We'll have to scan it and put it up on the KSCO.com website or something. By the way, everybody, you know, if you go to KSCO.com, which we haven't really promoted over the years, we were one of the first radio station websites in the whole world, but we haven't done a whole lot with it. We're starting to archive programs on it. You can listen to the Saturday special on demand. We'll probably have it so you can listen to other programs on demand. You know, Kay's editorials, mine, and so forth. There's all kinds of things there at KSCO.com and more ahead. So while we're promoting websites, why don't you promote yours, Jim and Bev?
Right. Well, Bev's is blackboxvoting.org, and that is ground zero for a lot of things. A lot of what I've done has been to analyze some of the other things that have been found all over, and I think the most important things I've written involve some letters to the California Secretary of State's office. Those are archived on my page. Again, rather than read out the URL, just Google Jim March and the word VotePrar, VotePrar, and you'll go straight to my page on the election systems mess, mostly focused on Diebold, but other systems as well. And there's a lot of interesting stuff there. Now, that will take you to a subpage of the rest of my site, which is on a completely different political subject. I don't know if we want to get into, you know, what.
Yeah, I think the website is kind of in a state of flux because, of course, what happened is, you know, I wrote the book, and then we converted everything to a nonprofit organization, so it's. The website's going through a redesign. It won't be long, and then when it's up and it's got all information on it, but it's going to have a lot more information in about a week when we've got our new look.
Let me ask you a personal question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Why did you convert to nonprofit status?
Oh, because I realized that to do investigation properly, you've got to travel. And you got to get right into the belly of the beast and talk to people at every level. And you can't do that without any funding. And people will be more likely to fund if they can take a tax deduction. So we wanted to create a tax-deductible nonprofit. And also, I didn't want it to be just me. In fact, people are surprised because what I did when I formed the nonprofit was give up all control. There's actually a board of directors in control, and I'm merely an employee that they can hire or fire. I also gave up.
But
all
someone
the
has to be. Someone has to be the czar.
Well, you know, no. I think this is. We got a great group of people, and I also gave up all the revenues and all the rights to my book, so that they fund actually the nonprofit now, because it. I realized after doing some traveling with my cohort and co-investigator, who's now our associate director, Andy Stevenson, that there were real problems out there, and you only get at them by going out and talking to people. You can only do so much on the Internet and the telephone.
Right.
It's amazing what happens when you knock at someone's door and they invite you in to sit at the dining room table and tell you what's really going on.
But I'll bet sometimes they slam the door in your face.
Sure.
You know that so far on this investigation, we have been referred to dozens of Diebold employees who have been told not only not to talk to the press, but not to talk to their friends and not to talk to their families.
And not to talk at all, or else they'll have their tongues cut out.
And yet the morale there is so low that we have not had a single one refuse to talk to us.
Oh, wow.
In fact, sometimes they talk to us for 2.5 hours and would probably talk more if we had
Does Diebold have this market cornered? That's the only that's the only private company we've talked about in this conversation.
No. In fact, there's four companies. Two of them, Diebold and Election Systems and Software, have control about 80% of the market. Election Systems and Software is also something you're going to start hearing more about. They also have been transferring votes by cell phone. In fact, one of the we've got also several referrals for Election Systems and Software employees, and they have slipped us some of the part numbers so that we can see that they have modems in these machines to and that they have very recently been transferring votes by cell phone, which is not a secure process.
What does that mean? What do you mean transferring votes by cell phone?
It means that instead of, you know, locking things in a ballot box and having six witnesses when you towed it down to the county, they're putting it out over the airwaves where people can mess with it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It's not good. And, in fact, let me tell you a funny story. In a recent election, I think it was in June, in Alabama, Election Systems and Software transferred votes by cell phone from a particular county. Well, a week later, 300 more votes showed up out of nowhere, and they claimed that they had been stuck in the modem. Now, I call that the My Dog Ate My Homework Award for a silly excuse. You cannot have votes sitting in a modem for a week.
They've got no memory.
It wasn't that there were zero votes and suddenly there were 300. There were some votes, and then 300 more just showed up.
This is an outrage. By the way, we do have Sue in Watsonville on line one, so let's bring Sue into the conversation. Hello, Sue.
Hi.
How are you, Sue?
Oh, I'm okay. Thank you. You know, I just wanted to thank Bev and Jim. Bev, I heard you on Coast to Coast with George Norrie. And
now, what's all that feedback? Do you have your radio on or something?
No, I don't.
Well, the feedback is coming from somewhere, and it's not from here.
Oh. I don't have my radio on.
Okay.
Anyway, I just think what you're doing is absolutely wonderful, and it's such a grassroots way to try to save our country and our democracy, and I just wanted to thank you.
Maybe it's because we have too many people on the line here. Thank you very much for your thanks, Sue.
Okay. Well, I had a quick question. If they are able to monitor 10% of the vote, is that going to be enough if there are problems? Is that going to be enough to cause an investigation or things to change?
Well, monitoring the vote, the most important thing is to be able to identify and document problems. And so that we can, you don't need to document every problem to be able to document serious enough problems that reforms and changes get put in place to protect the election. So what we've been doing, and by the way, I'm glad you like what we're doing. We'd love to have you join us in election watching. Please get over to the website and shoot us your contact information so we can have you helping out on that.
Okay.
But, yeah, the monitoring of the vote, and by the way, our organization is not the only one doing it. There's about seven organizations each monitoring different aspects of the vote, which I think is very interesting, all doing it very interesting things. We're concentrating on what I call core audit data. In other words, do the numbers match up? And that's legally something that with some teeth in it. In other words, if you have, for example, like what happened in Teller, Colorado, where more votes showed up than there were adults in the county, that's core audit data. It doesn't match. It can't be right. And that's what we're looking for, because that's the kind of thing that has so much teeth in it that you can come out and get an injunction and say, hey, before November, you need to correct this.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you so much again. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you, Sue.
Okay. If I could comment briefly on the question you posed to Bev, you know, why Diebold? Why pound on them? Well, there's two reasons.
No, that wasn't why. I just asked if they had a corner in the market. That's all.
I hadn't
heard any other companies mention.
Well, there's a few.
So I'm not defending Diebold. They sound like they're pretty slimy.
Oh, no.
Actually.
I know you're not. But here's two things you need to remember. One, the founder of Diebold, Global Election Systems, the predecessor to Diebold Election Systems, was a gentleman named Yurosevich. the founder of ESNS, one of their early technical guys and still a high executive. Bev, I don't know what his rank is at this point.
Oh, he's the vice president.
Right, okay. Well, his name is Yurosevich, too. They're brothers.
Right. Oh,
this is not good.
Okay, no.
You've got 80% of the market cornered by companies which have executives that are two brothers.
Right. Okay, that's problem number one.
Wow, it sounds like the radio business and the radio industry and Clear Channel Communications.
Oh, let's not even go there. Okay. The other thing you have to remember is Diebold is simply the first company where we got a hold of their program code, thanks to, Bev Harris. We got a hold of their programs and looked at it and went, this stuff stinks.
Sequoia has also now had its program code found.
Right,
and
right.
It is also... It has also been found to have stunning security flaws. And one of the particularly troublesome security flaws with Sequoia, which is used in Riverside, Santa Clara, San Bernardino counties, is that the Spanish language votes can be manipulated very easily to vote for the opposite candidate.
You can rig the terminals. You can rig the terminals so that anybody voting in Spanish for one candidate, the vote gets recorded the other way, and then when you turn the machine off, all the changes you put in the terminal to do that evaporate and cannot be found later. Just the act of turning the machine off blows those modifications out of the water. So, yeah, we're finding problems with Sequoia, too. But before we found the Sequoia issues, all right, our plan, and it's a plan still in progress, is let's show... first, just how bad the Diebold system is, and then if the Diebold system slipped past the federal oversight process, then that means the federal oversight process is broken. If the federal oversight process is broken, then we can't trust it to oversee ESNS or Sequoia or Hardin or Civic or these other big players.
Correct.
Solution. I don't mean to say the sky is falling, but there's no solution then.
We have to put checks and balances in place. We have to have the collective will to force our election officials.
Yeah, but
how do you
guarantee that all the checks and all the balances are honest checks and balances?
Well, that's what auditing is. With auditing, it's very difficult to circumvent. For example, if you have a printout at the polling place, and then you get another printout from a different system at the central tabulator, it eliminates certain kinds of fraud. It would not eliminate that Spanish ballot hack, but the Spanish ballot hack, if you have a voter-verified paper ballot and you're a Spanish-language voter and it comes out of the machine and it's got the opposite candidate on it, you're going to see it and it's going to fall apart pretty quick. So that's why that is such an important thing.
What if it does fall apart very quick? I mean, that sort of invalidates a whole election, and then what do they
That's
do?
Correct.
And
then That's correct. I think we really need to look at, but you got to find out first what the deal is. If the deal is that these things don't count right, then you got to face it squarely, roll up our sleeves, and solve the problem. And let me tell you, if the only solution in the short term, because they can't reprogram all the machines in America and certify them, if the only solution in the short term is to go buy a whole bunch of pencils and get a whole bunch of papers and give everyone the day off to count the vote so that we have enough vote counters, then let's just roll up our sleeves and do it. If it turns out that it's that bad, we don't know that yet.
That's what they were doing with the hanging chads, and people say that wasn't accurate.
Oh, but that was hanging chads. I'm talking about a paper ballot. You could have it printed by a printer, by the way, so it's very legible.
No, but the fact that weren't the hanging chads being recounted by humans and human eyeballs and fingers and things? Am I incorrect?
That wasn't the problem. That was completely a red herring, by the way. The real problem in Florida was actually the central tabulator on the optical scan, and they would say, oh, don't look there. Look over here at these hanging chads. No. The actual count of those hanging chads was fine. The central tabulator on the optical scans did very bizarre things which never made the news, like in Volusia County, Florida, 16,000 minus or negative votes showed up on that machine, and that never made the news. 16,000. That's a pretty big discrepancy.
What's a minus? What's a negative vote?
Exactly. How can you have a negative vote? There were not just one negative vote. There were 16,000 minus votes.
We're not talking about none of the above.
What happened? No, no, we're not.
No, we're talking about minus votes.
No, here's what happened.
Oh, God, now it's getting so fascinating. Not that it wasn't. I want to hear from Will in Carmel, so hold that thought. But Will is called long distance here. He's on line three, so let's bring Will in if he's still there. Because we only have 3.5 minutes left of the program. Are you there, Will? Hello?
We got him.
Okay, Will. Are you there, Will?
I'm here. Hello?
Okay. Yeah, what's your question?
My question is, what about the initiative that was put forward by several Democratic congressmen that the U.N. oversight our election? Is that in any way connected to this?
No. I think Bev agrees with me. I can't speak for her, but I believe personally that we, the U.S. citizens, can do a much better job at election monitoring without the kind of weird politics you find in the U.N. The U.N.'s not the answer, in my opinion.
Yeah, and there's no teeth in it anyway. What good does it do to have a bunch of people come in? We got to do this ourselves. We got to roll up our sleeves and take back our vote, and we've got to do it ourselves as Americans because it doesn't have any teeth in it anyway. If we as Americans say, hey, we've got numbers that don't match, then we must solve it. If the U.N. writes a report, what good does that really do? We just have a report that everybody, you know, kicks around the Internet for the next 2 years, but it hasn't really achieved anything.
Yeah. What happened in Volusia County is interesting. Somebody took a Diebold memory card containing the complete ballot box from one precinct. There was 980 voters on it. They copied it, and they hacked it. They altered the contents of a memory card, but the problem is they did it in an incompetent fashion. I guess what they wanted to do was, what they should have done is if they'd added votes for Bush, that would have been harder to catch. But negative votes for Gore, the way they did it, was just so wrong that somebody did visually catch that and go, the hell's that? Okay. What's really important, though, is that in Volusia County, we know there was an attempted electronic election fraud happened. It happened. The problem was, even though we caught the fraud, yay, that's good, bad, that's not good, is that we never caught who did it.
Right.
This is the problem, okay? You can tamper with electronic votes in such a fashion that it's hard to figure out who did it.
Wow.
So that means there's no risk of getting caught, or less risk, I should say, and that means you're more likely to get tampering. So,
our apologies.
Yes, we know of this tampering case in Volusia because it was so incompetent.
Hey guys, we're done. It's the end of the program. I got to thank you both. Apologize to Eric and Freedom who called a little too late. We won't be able to get to his phone call. I think you guys are great. You know, I think you're just wonderful. I think, you know, hero and heroine for what you're doing here to call this to the attention. It sounds like the mainstream media is giving you some attention. That we've done 2 hours. Hope this was beneficial to somebody. We're going to have it on the website. Click on Saturday special for the next week or so. If you guys want to provide a link to it, you can.
Yeah.
So that people can listen to this program through your website on demand, whatever you decide. But thanks for being with us and continued success to you. This is KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey. And if there's time for the That's All, folks, we'll play it and then go to the news. Thanks.
That's all, folks. KSCO Santa Cruz, KOMY, Watsonville.
Kurt Lewis reporting.
Overnight, the fire laid down pretty quiet.
Those fighting Nevada's wildfire near the capital of Carson City are getting a bit of help from the weather.
Humidities were up, temperatures down, winds were calm.
Fire information officers reporting 50%.